Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Biff on Sirius XM Radio.
And all you mistletoe, I want to get to you. This Christmas, and as you trim the tree, how much fun it's going to be together. This Christmas, fireside is blazing bright.
We're back. Through the night. A very good morning to Andy Serling, who joins us for the big year-end visit. Andy, I know that this is one of your most anticipated visits of the year.
It's an emotional high point, no question about it.
you just are coming on the back end of Rick Hammerly laying out some of the graded state committee inner workings. And as always, there's plenty of questions and consternation whenever they, drop their decisions.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think surely we tend to look at it through the glass of where, the jurisdiction that we're around. But I think that there are reasonable questions about decisions that are made or not made. And when you upgrade a race, the Stephen Foster, for instance, which I'm not, it may well probably did deserve an upgrade. I don't have a real problem with that in and of itself to a grade one. But you do it when the first and second finishers this year finished fourth and first, respectively, in a race that you downgraded that year, and the year that you downgraded it had four grade one winners in it, it's pretty clear their algorithm's broken if they're using an algorithm that downgraded Cigar Mile, where Olympiad, who won the Stephen Foster, finished fourth, and American Revolution won, and he finished second. And then this year, there were four grade one winners in it. So there's something wrong with that algorithm, the same algorithm that keeps a race like the American Oaks as a grade one, a race that they left on, they left as a grade one after it came off the turf last year, which is really sending misinformation out to the public. For people don't understand that, it's disgraceful we've done that. And, you know, there are other races, a Sandy to Hand. You know, the Woodward, I have no problem with the idea that perhaps the Woodward, not the cigar should have been left a grade one, but the Woodward, even though the second best older horse in the country won the Woodward this year, I understand that race has suffered a bit, as all of these races have. But the Cigar and Woodward go from grade ones to grade twos in the same year that the Sandy to Handicap and the now Sandy to Gold Cup, the old Hollywood Gold Cup, are both grade ones. Now, I understand it's California. The racing has struggled, and I'm certainly feel bad about that. But there's clearly the lack of equanimity in these kind of decisions. And there are other races, too, you could pinpoint. And I know there were a lot of reductions in California, but they weren't. There was one grade one, the Rodeo Drive, which should have been downgraded, just as they downgraded the year before the Flower Bowl. But it took an extra year to do that, I guess, in California. But regardless, though, the Flower Bowl was won last year, and the horse finished second, and this year probably should have won, is the Eclipse finalist this year, and Eclipse finalist last year, and made a case for herself to be champions in both those years. So there is the question of whether or not they're grading these in the same scale, or there's a support in what ways for one there isn't the other, or whether or not they're really doing it in a fair manner. And the Cigar is silly this year to have gone down, when you consider who ran first and second and what they did with them in the subsequent year, and then with the four horses this year. So it's not hard to question the overall decision making. I don't have any problem with the grades, but there's too many grade stakes in this country, and really the grade ones, because they're the ones that create sires. I mean, I guess for the fillies and mares, a little bit different, because their value as brood mares depends on it in a different way than colts, where you have to really win a grade one to have a chance to be a stallion of any value. So I don't know. It seems like, I realize that turf racing in this country, and we have a ton of turf racing in New York, but they're not producing the stallions that dirt racing is. And presumably a lot of the grading of stakes has to do with creating value as for breeding purposes. And yet the turf races don't really produce that. We can try as hard as we want, but it's very rare to get a effective turf stallion. In fact, you know, you take a course of a year, it was turf horse, bricks and mortar, and to get any kind of stud, you only had to be sold to Japan. And yeah, Oscar Performance is starting off really well this year, and certainly Kitten's Joy and English Channel were, you know, exceptions to that, but there are exceptions to the rule. So I think there probably needs to be a long look at the whole picture, and I think this year really was a very frustrating one, especially for New York. And once again, if there's going to be an equal degradation of the grades, that's not a bad discussion, because we do have too many graded stakes, but it doesn't feel like it's happening with equanimity.
A couple of just reactions on that, and I did actually print out the charts from the last 5 years for the Woodward and the Cigar, the American Oaks and the Foster, which got upgraded. And one thing with that American Oaks in particular, Andy, that is sort of, and I just, the last question I think I even asked Hammer was the self-perpetuating nature to some degree of what that race in particular, what that American Oaks does, because of the filly and mare turf program in California, the ones that stay, you know, that are based out there, like a Mucho Unusual that went on.
I understand. They run against each other and they declare them grade one races.
Exactly.
They're grade one races. But let's take a look at a couple horses that won duopoly. Okay, duopoly never raced again. But would anybody suggest that her form going to the race was grade one form? She had run third, I believe, in the Valley View two races before, and then she won an ungraded stake at Aqueduct. And she may have won an ungraded stake, the Risk Averse in New York. So I want to say she's a third to grade three and two ungraded wins. There's another horse for Karlovich Horse that won. I like that. I like, what was her name?
I got it. Hold
and
on, I got it right
she did come back and finish second to, I want to say, a Brandt horse in a couple, in a grade three and a grade two, one of them being the New York. She never won a grade one.
Competition of ideas.
These are two horses, by the way, that won that race in hand. So they certainly haven't shown themselves to be grade one horses. In fact, they've shown just the opposite, that they're not. And before anybody thinks that I have some bias against this, they're owned by a friend of mine, and one of them sold for a lot of money. So they benefited from it, but fair is fair. A grade one restricted Philly turf race in December 26th, it doesn't work. Listen, the American Oaks was a great race when it started. Cesario was exciting, Dimitrova, but it didn't really work, and they moved it there, but they're propping it up as a grade one. It's not a grade one race. And what they did last year is so inexcusable that it sort of damages their credibility, that they would actually say, well, it came off the turf, and we're going to leave it as a grade one. That's not a defensible move. Would that have been a grade one race if it stood on its own? That's what they're saying it was.
Right.
It's very, very rare that when a state graded state comes off the turf, that it should be left graded at all, frankly.
No, fair, but fair.
And I don't think grade one races should ever be taken off the turf. And if they are, then they should openly just, you know, not be grade ones.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't want to beat up California. I like California racing. But the juxtaposition between the races out there and our races, when you have two races like the Cigar and the Woodward, they're important races. The Woodward is one of the most historically important races in the country. Having said that, these races have been degraded. And it's because horses run less often. And there's no question that trying to run a race between Labor Day and the Breeders' Cup Classic is almost become frivolous and expecting it to be a strong race. The only chance that race would have at Belmont to be a super strong race would be if the Breeders' Cup was at Belmont. And the Breeders' Cup has degraded these races and a lot of other reasons things have happened. But it's a lot of it centers around the Breeders' Cup and a lot of it centers around horses running less. And once again, I have no problem universally downgrading races, but it doesn't feel like they're being done with equanimity. And this race this year seemed like an extraordinary example of that.
No, we have this. We seem to have this discussion, and the acknowledgement, Andy, that the number of horses that are out there, you know, competing for these races, you know, maybe it's stabilized now, but has been decreasing for a number of years, and yet the number of opportunities hasn't. And,
right.
You know, I'll bring this up with Sid. I'll let Sid tomorrow discuss this, you know, how much influence the breeding community has had in trying to, you know, maintain that universe.
And in reality, if that's at all the case, and I'm not saying it is, and I'm not saying you're saying it either, but it's a reasonable point to bring up, then the whole thing becomes sort of a sham.
Yeah, I mean, when you're hearing, you know, at the auction settings, when you're hearing so and so, you know, one, you know, X, Y, Z, and out of the stakes placed mare, and it's like, you know, it's a set of criteria that, you know, has instant value. I mean, it's a bit of an artifice. I mean, honestly,
you could argue that you know, it should be up to people who are buying these horses and who are staying these horses
to discern.
To discern, but they also should be able to rely on, you know, a system that's been created to value them. But I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting to see how horses get stud deals and they get stallion deals, and it's winning these big races and winning grade ones. And sometimes, you know, we've seen examples of horses that have won grade ones by heads and necks that get stud deals, and horses of similar pedigree run second and they don't get stud deals. And that's a whole different discussion, but there has to be some, it has to be very fair, and it doesn't feel like it's being done in a fair manner. And I don't, the cigar mile, I mean, just makes no sense to me when you consider what happened 2 years ago and this year in particular. And I know that it had been, you know, there have been some warnings about it, but I don't know what was wrong with it this year. I mean, who did they get to run it this year that was even eligible to run? Everybody else been retired, right? Who did anybody else in training, for God's sakes?
Is there...
I mean... And there should be no grade ones, right?
Yeah.
And you can say at the end of the year, I don't know, why not? It's worked in the past. It's been a very strong race in past years.
I've got it right here. This year, Mind Control, Getter Number, White Abario, Zandon, and then the two Norm Cash runners. 21, American Revolution, your winner, Following Sea, Plainsman, Olympiad, who obviously went on to a big year.
Right, Olympiad was one of the top, ran second to the Breeders' Cup Classic, was one of the top older horses in the country this year. American Revolution finished second to him in the Foster. It's not as though Following Sea was a bad horse, right? He had been third in the Alan Jerkins, and he'd won the Vosburg in his prior start. This is a legitimate grade one field.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a good enough field for them to use it to help upgrade the Stephen Foster this year.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point too. The parallel. The year before, True Timber, Snapper Sinclair, Performer, King Guillermo, Mr. Buff, and Bone Raisin.
No, that was not a great year. You know, Performer turned out to never really get back from that injury. There's no question that was a down run. No question. What was the year before that?
Maximum Security, Spun to Run, True Timber, Looking at Bikinis, Forewarned, Bal Harbor, who I just saw win Saturday night.
Well, he's not a, but he won a claim reserve. But, well, Maximum Security, as I recall, he was one of the Clips Award finalists that year.
I mean, well, he was the...
Hard Horse Fear.
Yeah.
And he was probably a three-year-old champ, right?
He was. Okay. Absolutely. And, of course, you know, now there's people saying he should
stripped. Well, that's bullshit. I mean, then take away his Clips Award.
That's the question. Whitmore. Actually, Whitmore ran there, too. I forgot that he had, that Ron Whitmore tried.
Wasn't he a champion the next year?
Okay. 2 years later, I think. But still. Then in 2018, which is
far... No, he was the champion in 20. He won the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland in 2020. So the next year.
You're right. You're right. That's right. So
he'd only won the Forego that year. He won the Forego that year. But okay, go ahead.
And then in 18, Pattern Recognition, True Timber, Sunny Ridge, Mendelssohn, Pat on the Back, Stand the Man, Timeline, and Coppertown.
Yeah, I mean... Mendelssohn was a legit grade one horse.
Of course.
And the winner was a good horse. He didn't get a stallion, he didn't have a big pedigree, and his only one other race after that was finishing last in the Pegasus in the Slot, but he was retired after it because he had an injury. But he also won the Kelso in his prior start. But okay, that's a little bit on the shaky side. But it's not like this is a definitively weak race that should be downgraded.
It's
you print the San Diego handicap at the Hollywood Gold Cup or the San Diego Gold Cup. Did that field?
I didn't, but we can certainly.
I know Cupid won it a few years ago. Do you think of him as a real grade one horse?
I'm a Cupid fan, so I'm the wrong guy.
I got nothing against Cupid.
I'm the wrong guy to ask, but
wrong guy. I think Dynaverse is the greatest horse of all time.
That's right.
I can stand on that because we have our own pets. Everybody has their own pets. It's not like this, but I think you'd be realistic and say that Cupid was probably not a super strong grade one type horse.
Well, here's
the one. True Timber.
Well, here's
was he better than True Timber.
I will.
Don't think so.
Well, the Gold Cup actually is going to look very good. The previous five winners starting in 2018.
Yep.
Accelerate.
Okay.
Vino Rosso.
2019, okay, that's good. Yeah, you're right.
Improbable.
Okay.
Country grammar.
Not really, but okay.
There goes Harvard, who I've completely forgotten about. Where is he?
I never knew about him to begin with. Who are the also rans in there?
All right, let's.
You've got three very good horses won those races, no doubt about it.
All right, this year it was There Goes Harvard, Defunded, Royal Ships, Stiletto Boy, and Spielberg.
Okay, great seven. Okay, next.
Country Grammar's Gold Cup was Country Grammar, Royal Ship again. Express Train.
It's like True Timber. He's the West True Timber. Right?
Exactly.
He is. I mean, he's a really neat horse. I'm not trying to knock him.
That's great, actually. You're right. That's exactly right. He runs in every one of these races.
He's a really cool horse. I'm not knocking
him. Express Train, Rushy, Haywood's Beach, 235.
Oh,
yeah, that was not a great field.
Who's behind Improbable?
Behind Improbable, we're looking at Higher Power and Tenfold.
Tenfold. He went right in probably the big performance of the Pim Special, the grade three, in his next start.
Brownstorm, Midcourt, who was actually second choice and did not lift a hoof.
Quite a race.
Parsimony. So Improbable basically beat Higher Power, and that was really all the account. Now, Vino
who
Rosso.
Higher Power? I don't remember who he was.
A nice. Higher Power's also Sheriff's. Vino Rosso beat Giftbox, Lone Sailor, Mongolian Groom, Higher Power again, Core Beliefs, and Blitzkrieg.
It's not really shaping up as a Grade 1 race, Steve.
Well, except for the win.
It's not more deserving to be Grade 1 than the Cigar Mile. Sorry.
I hear you. Accelerate 2018.
It was a terrific horse.
Dr. Door. But City of Light. There's City of Light third in that race.
Okay, so that's when you have City of Light and Accelerate. That's strong.
Actually, City of Light was beaten favorite that spot.
They had a terrific ride, and he turned the tables on him in Oakland. Or he had beaten him in Oakland. Well, he was favorite because he had beaten him in Oakland the prior start. And now he's trying to go a mile and a quarter, I guess.
Well, this is the Gold Cup, though.
Is the Gold Cup mile and a quarter?
The Gold Cup is a mile and a quarter, but in terms of timing. Oh, maybe.
Gold Cup's the end of.
Oh, it's May. Actually, yeah. No, it's May. That's right. You're right.
It came after Oakland.
Yeah.
It did come after
Oakland. You're right. You're right.
Okay, so that actual race had two Grade 1 horses. You didn't make a strong case for that race to remain a Grade 1 while downgrading the Cigar.
I'm not making a case either way.
I'm not saying you're trying to. I'm saying that discussion doesn't back up leaving that race as a Grade 1 if you're going to downgrade the Cigar. I don't have a problem leaving them both as Grade 1s, though that's a bigger discussion. Maybe they both should have been downgraded.
No.
Should we discuss the last five runs of the Woodward?
Sure, I got that.
Well, you're really on your game today.
You
must really be trying to end the year with a bang.
I am.
Isn't the most prepared you've ever been for? I hope Priv is listening, because he would be impressed by this.
He was listening to the first hour because he was driving to an appointment, and he texted me. He loved the first hour because I just was sort of yammering like a sweet potato. I just was just sort of
yammering like a sweet potato. That doesn't work.
A yam, sweet potato.
I know. I understand why you said it. Go ahead.
All right. 2018, the Woodward, Yoshida, Gunavera, Leofric, Rally Cry, Patch, Term of Art, Hence, Taprit, Sunny Ridge, Zanati, Kirilov, Discreet Lover, Seeking the Soul, and Imperative.
All right, not a great race, but it does have the Belmont Stakes winner in it. I mean, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's great, but I would say it's a stronger race than a lot of the runnings of the Hollywood Derby. Next.
Hollywood
Gold Cup.
You do have, I think, out of there, actually, I think you've got four or five stallions, which is notable. In 2019, Preservationist, who I'd forgotten about for Jimmy. Here's good old Bal Harbour again, Yoshida, Tom's Day Tot, who kept on ticking, Mongolian Groom.
The Tom's Day Tot who won the Stephen Foster.
Yes.
Now a Grade 1. Okay, just making sure.
Wooderson, the Rachel sibling, Mr. Buff, and Forewarned.
Not a Grade 1 running.
The 2020 Global Campaign, Tacitus, Prioritize, Spinoff, and Math Wizard.
you know, the first two finishers were solid horses, so I wouldn't knock that. Still, no better, no worse than a lot of the riders in the Hollywood Gold Cup. I'm not making a great case for this race to remain a Grade One. I'm not going to argue.
I hear you. The 21 version: Art Collector, Maxfield, Dr. Post, Code of Honor, Forza d'Oro, and Mogacha.
Well, Code of Honor is a Grade One horse.
Maxfield.
Hit the wire in his next start with Vino Rosso. Maxfield was second in Stephen Foster that year, a race they upgraded to a Grade One. And then he won the Clark, which they downgraded, but I don't know if they're swapping them. I don't know. There's some story there. And certainly the winner of that race, Art Collector, is a Grade One quality horse.
Yes. Yeah, that's fair. And then this year, of course, Life is Good wins it.
Life is Good and not a very great bunch, but so you could compare it to any of the, you know, two of the stronger runnings of the Hollywood Gold Cup.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, once again, not a huge problem of being downgraded, but I have a problem of being downgraded and the other race not being downgraded. And I don't think anybody else would disagree too strongly with that. And listen, this is not picking on California. I wish California racing was as good as it always was. Just I wish all of our racing was good as it always was. And I know that there's a lot of West Coast, there's most West Coast paranoid people, even they acknowledge that I'm a fan of California racing. It's not a negative. I'm just using them as legitimate counterexamples. And anybody who thinks that I have some East Coast bias against West Coast racing has never really listened to anything I've said, because I'm a huge fan of California racing.
Wait a minute. There is a very strange scenario between the Woodward and the Foster. The last five Foster winners have all come out of the Woodward.
Well, but now it's a Grade One. So there you go.
So how does the Foster benefit and to the detriment of the Woodward? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, the Olympiad didn't come out of the Woodward.
Well, that's actually, I'm sorry, out of the, that's true, out of the Cigar Mile.
They shouldn't have downgraded the Woodward and upgraded the Foster. They shouldn't have downgraded the Woodward and left the Hollywood Gold Cup as a Grade One. Period.
Yeah, this is nuts. I mean, Pavel.
It's not congruous.
Pavel Seeking the Soul. Tom's the Tot. Maxfield and Olympiad.
Not exactly a group that distinguishes himself as Grade One types, by the way.
Well, but Maxfield was
proved
second.
Himself not to be a Grade One horse, to be honest. I know he won the Clark, but they downgraded the Clark. The truth of Maxfield was that he was a really nice horse, and I won a Grade One as a 2-year-old. But after that, he kept losing those races at short prices, right? He went out and lost to San Anita Handicap. And by the way, he lost to Idol. How has Idol done since that race? And how did he do before it? Do we think of him as the Grade One horse? And I loved Idol. I thought it was a really cool horse.
I'm just taken by, I mean, the, for instance, the American Revolution and Olympiad. Olympiad wins the this year's Foster, and American Revolution is second, and they're coming out of the 21 Cigar. It's a nebulous. I trust the system. I trust the process, but I don't know. To quote Broadway Danny Rose, it's a complete type of situation.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's fair to question the when you look at the correlations between these races. I think it's fair to question the decisions that were made.
All right, that we will leave it at that. Andy, how about some holiday and New Year's greetings for the listeners?
Okay, happy holidays and happy New Year. Everybody happy now?
Yes. When do you return? When do you return to the broadcast airwaves?
The 30th.
Well, you're going to be into the bit.
I don't think so.
You're not going to be fresh and ready?
I watched all six episodes of Fleischman's in Trouble yesterday. You didn't read the book because you're not literate. Did you watch it on Hulu?
Have not yet watched it on Hulu, no.
Really good. It's a really, really, really good book. And actually, I'm starting to really enjoy the show.
Excellent.
I don't really have any great... I hope everybody's happy and appreciates horse racing.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to be totally negative on these grading things, but I think it is very fair to question the decisions because as a group, they don't really make a lot of sense. But I do support the notion of lowering grades across the board. I do agree with this. You can't say these foal props are half of what they used to be. We've got more grade ones. It's not supportive. I mean, in reality, it actually works completely against the problem that when people talk about contraction in the industry, these small tracks should close. It's not as simple as that. There are reasons that small tracks are important in the industry.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
You don't, even if your foal crop's 21,000, you don't go from breeding 40,000 to 20,000 and say, well, we're going to get the same number of good horses. We're just going to breed less bad horses. It doesn't work that way.
Nope.
And so you need places for horses to run. And also, without smaller tracks, you can't really grow the sport in any way because you want to get people to the racetrack. There are a lot of people who come to Saratoga in the summer, and most of them didn't start by going to Saratoga, right? They went to Suffolk Downs. My first track was Liberty Bell. There's so many tracks over lifetime that people started going to. So it's, the minor leagues are always important in sports. So I don't, it's a bigger discussion. But to have more grade ones while the foal crops are going down is making sense. So once again, I'm not crying about those races being downgraded. I just don't believe they should be downgraded based on other decisions that were made. That's all I'm saying.
No, I'm sure everybody...
We all have to bite the bullet. We all have to. And the truth is, maybe it would be better for our grade ones if they would downgrade so many so that people would have to run in grade ones.
Exactly.
That's the idea.
Exactly.
We're giving them too many opportunities.
Exactly.
So, in essence, it has to help the actual grade ones that remain.
No, exactly. In fact, Hammer brought that point up, too, that if there isn't a grade one cigar mile to run in after Breeders' Cup, that will force some hands into the Breeders' Cup.
But I also think it's incumbent on all of us, and that particularly means us at NYRA, to try to find creative ways to get these races back to being as strong as they have been in the past. For instance... One thing that I had done with PJ Campo was incentivize horses to run the cigar mile. You're running for more money if you're a grade one winner. You're running for more money if you're a Breeders' Cup winner.
Right.
Increase the person flat out took great advantage of that when he won the race. Maybe we should move the Woodward, right? Maybe we should have a three-race series, whereas the Woodward, the Whitney, and the Jockey Club, and tie them together with bonuses and encourage people to run in these races. We have to find ways as well. I mean, a lot of the blame also falls on us. I'm not trying to say, these races aren't as good as they've been in the past. There are reasons that are out of our hands, but I don't think that we can just sit back and say, well, it's not my fault. And, we all tend, all of us and all the things we do in racing, and I'm not putting fingers at people that work at NYRA that don't have I'm to blame as much. We sink or swim together, is part of the equation when we do things that are good, and everybody's part of the equation when we do things that aren't as good. But I think as a company, it's important to us to come up with reasons and ways to make these races better. And I'm not saying that downgrades weren't necessary. I'm just saying they don't really fall into line with decisions that were made on other races.
They're incongruous. Agreed. That's fair. There's some incongruousness involved.
Yeah. I mean, everybody in racing and everything we do in racing, we can continuously should be sitting around trying to figure out how to do what we do better, and never rest on our laurels because there's always, no matter what it is, our TV show can be better. That's for sure. None of us should ever be sleeping on the job and showing up unprepared,
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to every one of us, myself certainly included.
You're never not prepared.
Never. I'm not, but that doesn't mean that I have to make sure it doesn't happen, right?
There you go.
Like you. I mean, I use it as an example of how bad it is in the shows when you're not prepared.
Luckily, there's you and Jay to keep me focused.
And Jay has a lot more free time now, so he can really stay on it. All right, who's your next guest?
Case Clay.
Oh, okay. Well, say hi to Case for me and have fun.
Andy Serling, everyone, with a powerful season-ending visit. There it is. He's so crazy. Oh, God. I say it regularly. I deserve an award. And we will get, Jay will visit before the year end. We'll get some of Jay's year end thoughts. We still haven't talked to Clips. We still haven't got the Clips conversations in. And as much as I should. And we do have the team yet to talk to as well from thisishorseracing.com. We got to talk to the Clancys, and I guess we talked to Tom Law last week, so Law's out of the way, but we got to get the Clancys. But right now it's a pleasure. I guess they say the long time between drinks, as they say at the racetrack. It's been too long since you've been on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm great. Case Clay joining us, and it'll feel weird to not say Case Clay of Three Chimneys. It's like one of those monikers that's grafted onto your name.
Yeah, it's been an honor, and I'm there. Three Chimneys is going to be a client of mine, so I guess I can still halfway say that.
Well, exactly, and you know, the opportunity here for you to, you know, to kind of expand and I don't want to say be out from under, that's not the right term, but it you know, you're basically going to be, I guess I could tie it to what Rudy Brissett, what went on with him the other week, you know, is not going to be just confined to the Windstar horses. You can take on any kind of a client in all the things you do that you've done, you know, so well for so long.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been the Tori Albas have been the owners of Three Chimneys have been great to me in that they've allowed me to have outside clients for the past 5 or 6 years, which is include Willis Horton Racing and Arrowfield Stud in Australia and Balmar Equine, and so it's allowed me to build up a client base, and it just feels like the right time that I've got those clients to try and grow that more. And yeah, I'm also thankful to the Tori Albas because I'm going to be a client of theirs, mainly with regard to Gunrunner, to try and get some, trying to broaden his presence in Japan and Australia. I've got Australian and Japanese clients, and try and get more offspring of Gunrunner out there in those countries and see what he can do there as well, because he's had such a great start here.
Well, and you know, for those that don't, you know the whole connection here, and of course, Case's family, Three Chimneys, for how many years? How long was
1972? So it was 42 years. My parents owned the farm, and then sold half of it in the end of 2012 to the Tori Albas family. And then eventually got out. So, in other words, the Tori Albas ended up taking over the whole farm and now own 100% of it. So, yeah, I mean, I feel very lucky that I grew up in a family business and then sold the business and stayed at the business for 8 years. And now it's time for the next chapter.
Well, and you know, you in addition to everything you did and basically were responsible for at Three Chimneys. I mean, you talk about some of those clients you've brought on, and you know, you've already established a terrific record of success. And in fact, all you got to do is think about Dalika for Balmar, who's been, you know, just terrific. So you're scouring the globe for potential acquisitions, doing bloodstock advice. I mean, talk about the things that you enjoy the most and you feel are, you know, your top aptitudes.
Well, I think I've been lucky just from growing up at Three Chimneys that have a lot of relationships. It's a relationship business, and back in the old days when it was had outside borders, you know, we had a lot of clients from all over the world, and Dalika was actually kind of a product of that, because we used to board horses for Gestüt Ammerland, and Gestüt Ammerland bred Dalika, and I called Crispin de Mowbray, who works for them, and you know, said, might she be for sale? So really, the relationships are big in my mind. Some of the stuff I've enjoyed the most, and by the way, I love German blood, as do a lot of people. But it's just that they're such tough horses, and Dalika is such a tough filly. But I love the international part of this business as well. You know, do work for Aerofield. And I'm going down to the Magic Million sale in January. And met the Torre Albas because it's such an international business. He was in Brazil, had a stud in Brazil, bought Three Chimneys and owns it now. So they've been great to me. So to answer your question, I love the relationships part of this business, and I love the international parts of this business.
You know, well, and the tie to Aerofield and the Magic Millions, this is something that's getting more and more attention. You know, we've talked to Kip Elser, who goes down. We've talked to McPeak, McPeak. He could turn up anywhere that they're selling horses. The constant search. All the various avenues that these days. I mean, it's never been more true, Case, that a good horse can come from anywhere.
Yeah, that's right. And Australia, I've got some partnerships that we own mares in Australia that are at Aerofield, and I've been doing that for about 3 years. And, you know, they've gone up from last year they had 75 races worth a million Australian or more. Now that number's 84. One in 450 people own a piece of a racehorse in Australia. Hmm. They're just rabid about horse racing, and there's so much enthusiasm. And so to own mares down there and sell offspring at the sales, you know, that purse money just all trickles down to people. The more they can earn on the racetrack, the more they're going to probably spend on yearlings. So that's been the approach, and the market down there is just incredible. And so it's great to be a part of it. I'm happy to see Kentucky also having a very healthy market with our purse structure up here. So it's an exciting time.
In terms of attracting new clients, give a feel for, what advice that people might be listening that are interested in the game and are looking for somebody with the kind of experience you've got. I mean, what should we be communicating to an interested community out there that sees how exciting the game is, but are, you know, uncertain about how to start?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you gotta find someone that you can trust, and usually it's someone you know that knows someone, you know. So if for anybody out there that is thinking about it and they know someone who knows someone, that, you know, referrals are great. In other words, you know, you want to get in with somebody that's going to do you the right way, or look after you the right way. and guide you through it, because it's a very tough business. There's lots of bad news. But that feeling of owning a piece of something that crosses the finish line first, there's nothing like, as you know, there's nothing like it. So, you know, take what disposable income you'd be okay with losing, and have fun with it. So that would be my advice. Get someone you trust and don't spend your life savings on it, but spend what disposable income you can have to have fun, because there's going to be no fun like it.
And you know, to that I totally agree, and it's very refreshing to hear you to hear anyone acknowledge up front that you don't come into this thinking that I'm going to invest this and I should get 2.5 back percent, that whatever, on my money. It doesn't work that way. It can be treated as a business, but you better think of it as a hobby, and as something that is for enjoyment, for entertainment, yeah, purposes only. I'll say this too, and at some, I forget what conversation it was this year that it came up. It was in a breeding disc. It may have been with Aaron Wellman, and the same mentality case that we bring to horseplay in regards to action bets versus prime bets, it can be tied to some of the decision making, or the avenues in which people come into the game. If you're somebody that wants immediate gratification, well, then you're gonna buy 2-year-old in training sale types. Or you're going to claim horses. If you want to do it at a high level, you're going to claim for 50 or 62.5 or 75,000, and you're going to have a racehorse tomorrow. You're going to buy maybe at these pop-up digital sales, horse of racing age sales. Your next opportunity is in January and February. But if you're somebody that is more patient and wants to see the horizon and sort of see it move more slowly, well, then you're somebody that could buy weanlings and buy yearlings, buy a broodmare and get them covered, and you're going to wait for your payoff and for your action. It's two different mindsets, and nothing says you can't, you do portfolio management, nothing says that you can't do both.
No, yeah, that's right. And I do like the, we were talking about hobby and the racing and the risk. What I do like about, there is less risk in the broodmares. That's why I like the Australian market and selling broodmares. It's slower, but it's a bit safer. And racing is purely the thrill. So, I have clients, we in the horse business have clients that, look, they just want to go racing and they just want to go have fun. And then there are others that are, I'm going to play it a little bit safer and do the broodmare and sell babies out of that broodmare. There's still risk, but there's less risk there. And then there are clients that do both. The Hortons have mares and they also race. So that's a little bit of a diversification. And if you have a nice baby, well, that's less money that you have to spend at the yearling sales, because you've already got kind of a nice one. You've paid the stud fee, but you're not having to go pay a premium and get into a bidding war with somebody on a nice one at the auction. So, a bit of everything.
You mentioned, maybe take a second too. Got about 5 minutes, and since you do manage the portfolio for the Hortons, and I did not get a chance actually to real, other than mentioning his passing in October, should really acknowledge Willis Horton, because he was a lot of fun. He put a lot in the game, and it was certainly wonderful when he managed to get a series of really nice horses kind of late in his life.
Yeah, he was a great man. He was my first outside client, the Three Chimneys, and I was sitting in a truck with him in Arkansas, and I had written up a consulting agreement, you know, kind of your standard agreement, and he had it tucked up in the visor of his truck, and he pulled it out. He had read it, and he said, you know, I've read this, and you know, I'm more of a handshake guy, and so if you're okay with, and he put the agreement back up in the visor, and we shook hands, and you know, I was his client for 6 years, and still worked for the family. So he was one of those rare guys that, you know, he was as good as gold. His word was as good as gold, and I'm glad that he was rewarded with some nice horses.
Very much, and of course, you know, the litany of. He was an Arkansas native, and the litany of and the passion about the game and horseplay and everything related to the sport in Arkansas. It's really it's second almost to none. I mean, you know, there are certain areas of the country where the game is just, you know, held in the highest regard, and that regard is unshakable. And Arkansas is one up here in the Saratoga area, of course, and I mean, goes without saying, Kentucky and Florida, Louisiana and California. There's certain places, and he was absolutely the Arkansas, you know, owner breeder from Central Casting.
Yeah, he was revered down there, and they had a nice horse run on Saturday, ran second in the stake, Last Samurai, ran a good number, and they've got about 10 with Wayne, and then one with Steve, and then half of Bank It with Ron Winchell and Steve Asmussen, and so they're still going, and Glenda's still, you know, Willis's wife, widow, is still enjoying the game, and Kevin, his son, is too, so we'll try and make him proud.
How about Balmar? I saw one the other day run somewhere.
Yeah, Repealing ran. You know, he's got some on the shelf and some on the track. He runs with Al Stahl, great trainer, great man, and so Dalika's gonna kind of pointing toward the Pegasus filly and mare race, and then breeder, so she's six turning seven, and she's given him some great joy, and then we'll try and take the next step.
In good spirits, is she finished?
She is finished. Yes. So she'll go to the breeding shed as well. And see how it goes.
Well, because she RNA'd November.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. She RNA'd at Facing Tipton, and so, you know, try and put her in foal and maybe try that again with a baby in her belly, you know, kind of see what happens there.
Nice. I would love that. They sometimes that, because she did not have a great year, and so maybe that you never know. It's one of the great phenomenons of those hormones start to roll around, and all of a sudden they find their form again.
Yeah, well, you know, we wouldn't run her.
No, just
put her in. You know, she when I say try again, maybe try and sell her again, but
I got you.
Pregnant.
I got you.
So, yeah.
Well, Case, I saw the note that, you know, you're going to be fully out on your own, and I've known you now a long time, and such respect for any time we've done anything together. I told everybody about the horses we did with Chuck, and I mm-hmm. wish you the best of luck, and always great to connect with you. For those that you know, that those of you that know Case, you don't need me, but if you need to know more, caseclay.com. He's got a beautiful, extensive website to get in touch with him. You can also follow him at Twitter under caseclay1, and that says all you need to know. He's the number one, Case Clay.
Well, thanks, Steve. I always love listening to your show. Usually listen to you while I'm driving, and it's great to know you and really appreciate the time.
Not at all. Case Clay, everybody, and the great Heritage himself. It's the time at Three Chimneys and his really global experience. You'd be in great hands. Merry Christmas, Case, to you and the family, and we'll see you soon.
You too, Steve. Thanks so much.
Case Clay, there you go. And there's our show for a Tuesday. Todd Fincher with us earlier, right? And Andy. And Hammer gave you the Graded State Committee insights. Back for the Wednesday. And, of course, Todd Fincher. There's four today? Yeah, I didn't get the popo. Andy, Case, Todd, and Hammer. That was it. 3 hours just goes by in a blink. Good luck if you're playing today. Tomorrow they draw for opening day at Santa Anita. It'll start to get exciting. We'll be back with you with everything for Wednesday. Dick Powell and Sid, much, much more. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in